Third World Americans, Special Edition Number 1. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first special edition of Third World American. My name is Paul, and man alive, has it been a long time since I posted a show here. There are plenty of reasons for this, both good and bad, which I'll tell you about in episode 5. But for now, I have something special to share with you, and it just couldn't wait any longer. That's what this special edition is all about. Today I'm going to read you an essay, about 20 minutes long, written by a fantastic essayist named Judith Moriarty. Judith has kindly given me permission to read this essay on my show, and the reason I want to do it is this. In this essay, which is entitled From Dust Bowl to Rust Bowl, she has probably articulated what Third World America is about even better than I ever could. And it's my friggin' trademark. People often ask me what I mean by third world in this show. After all, this is the mighty United States of America, the most prosperous nation in the world, where even the poorest citizens enjoy such luxuries as Nike sneakers and television sets. How could I ever claim that America is suffering from another Great Depression, let alone that it's suffering from the very same depression that began in 1929? Well, that's the irony, isn't it? We are so focused on what we have that we forget to pay attention to what we don't have, or worse, to what we've lost. I don't give a damn about sneakers or televisions. I care about a stable home, a stable job, stable personal finances, a quality education, security from foreign invaders, freedom from domestic tyranny, and the ability to pursue happiness, unimpeded by a government that is controlled by we the people of the United States. That's what I care about. Yes, we have sneakers and televisions and cell phones and computers and DVD players and MP3 players, but any one of us could lose our homes tomorrow. Any one of us could lose our jobs tomorrow. Any one of us could be forced into bankruptcy tomorrow. Well, that is, we could if bankruptcy still existed, that is. Or didn't you know that last year Congress effectively made Chapter 7 bankruptcy impossible for the people who need it the most? You might want to look into that, since the corporate-controlled media didn't bother to tell many people. We all suffer from what may very well be the most pathetic public education, higher education system that any culture has ever wasted its time on. And I, for one, don't feel particularly powerful against foreign invaders when nearly our entire military is trying not to get killed in other countries. If China put its 1 million-man army into boats and set sail for California today, there'd be no one left here to protect us when they arrive tomorrow. Our corporate-controlled government has become a far greater tyranny than anything our founding fathers ever faced. It is so powerful, in fact, that our pathetic education system and the corporate-controlled media has dumbed down the population to the point where they don't even realize that we live under a tyranny, because they've been carefully trained to demand nothing more out of life. That's something that the world has never seen before. And, of course, we are no longer in control of our government. Just recently, before midterm elections, no less, Congress boldly passed the Military Commissions Act, which reduces the right of habeas corpus to ashes. Habeas corpus has been valued by every civilized society since it was included in the Magna Carta back in the Middle Ages. It's the right to demand a reason for your imprisonment if you are imprisoned by your government. The United States Congress took that away from us a few weeks ago, and President Bush is very anxious to sign it into law, even though it blatantly violates the U.S. Constitution and fundamental human rights. When you understand the implications of this, you'll quickly realize that losing habeas corpus effectively annihilates 9 out of 10 items in the Bill of Rights. We don't even live under the U.S. Constitution anymore, yet Americans continue waving the stars and stripes anyway, just like those little bobbing head puppets you'll find on automobile dashboards. Yes, we have completely forgotten what we've lost as a nation and as autonomous individuals. Are we really autonomous because we're allowed to choose which of the 20 brands of beer we're going to drink, when all they do is fuck up our minds and our families and our communities equally? Are we really autonomous when we're allowed to choose whether we get our lies and distractions from this cable channel, or from that cable channel, or from any of 200 other bastardized corporate cable channels out there? Are we really autonomous when we can freely choose to listen to NPR, brought to you by, insert corporate sponsor here, while so-called pirate radio operators who would actually tell us the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, they're thrown into prison? Are we really autonomous when we're allowed to select which idiotic and arrogant university our children will receive their useless educations from? Are we really autonomous when our two-party system allows us to freely choose our president from two candidates, both of whom are billionaires, both of whom are members of the secret Skull and Bones Society, and neither of whom has the slightest conception of what life is really like for the average American citizen today? You call that free? You call that autonomous? Have you ever seen those homeless people pushing shopping carts around, filled with all kinds of garbage? Well, I interviewed one of those people recently here in Southern California. And believe it or not, this homeless person had a name. She also had a personality and a life story to tell. Yes, folks, believe it or not, this homeless person turned out to be an actual human being. Imagine that. Her name is Heidi, and she's a real sweetheart. She shouldn't be pushing a shopping cart around the streets of Riverside, California. But guess what? Her prospects for getting back to a normal life in this country are so slim, they're non-existent, really, that she's created a whole life for herself out of that shopping cart instead. Really, what other choice does she have? Her cart was organized with toiletries in one place, her clothes in another, special bags to hold the items that other people have discarded, but she can use them. She's even has a special area of the cart to hold items that she might be able to sell or to donate to a shelter somewhere. That little shopping cart held an entire world for Heidi. Not much different than the typical suburban home, if you really think about it. From most people's perspective, she's just a pathetic homeless woman pushing a shopping cart full of junk around town. But guess what? The same could be said for most of us. We're pushing our SUVs around town, filled with nothing but useless junk that we don't need, with a little compartment set aside to hold our toiletries and our clothes. But just like Heidi, none of us has truly free speech. None of us has a responsible free press. None of us has a genuine opportunity to prosper proportionally to how hard we're willing to work. Neither Heidi nor any one of us has a government that is controlled by the people. Both Heidi and us have a government that is controlled by corporations who control the elite class of puppets who fill the seats in Washington. Neither Heidi nor you nor me is safe from Osama bin Laden, since President Bush has promised so many years ago to smoke him out of his cave has proven to be just another Bush administration lie. 5 years after 9/11, Osama bin Laden still walks around, apparently with more money and power than most American citizens have. I've seen a hell of a lot of Americans take punishment over the past 5 years, however, in the form of higher taxes, new taxes, job losses, bureaucracy, regulations, rules, and the almost complete loss of our constitutional rights. This applies to you and to me, and to homeless Heidi equally. So why exactly do we think we're better than her again? Heidi looks at us funny, as if we somehow haven't noticed how impoverished we are. And she has one thing that none of us have: freedom. As a homeless person, she has more freedom in her daily life than any of us have. She has no home tying her down to one place. no debts that chain her directly to some ruthless credit card company or bank. She hasn't been indoctrinated by the mass media by sitting in front of a television set for hours a day, year after year. Isn't it rather arrogant for us to think we're better than her? You know, kind of like the elite dictatorship in Washington, D.C. looks down on people like you and me as if they're better than us? That is what Third World America is all about. Poverty. Loss. Lack. Want. A civilization that is moving backwards. A government that passes laws that gets rid of fundamental human rights that have been enjoyed by world citizens since the Middle Ages. Like I said before, I don't give a damn about your Nikes or your goddamn television set. You live in poverty, my friend. You live in a third world nation that has lost... No, let me rephrase that. A nation that has voluntarily given up more than the people of most nations could ever hope to enjoy in their entire lifetimes. Is it any wonder that people in other nations look to us with utter contempt? You know, kind of like a homeless person who watches some jackass throw away 9/10 of a pizza right in front of their face, just to mock those who are starving. So let's bring this situation down to earth a bit by hearing how Judith Moriarty describes the situation in her essay, which is entitled From Dust Bowl to Rust Bowl. She wrote this essay in March of 2004, and I will now read it in its entirety. I do apologize for the background noise, but I live in a third world nation, and I have no choice but to record this right now from a roadside motel room in Riverside, California. I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make it hard wherever I may go, and I ain't got no home in this world anymore. Woody Guthrie. Once upon a time, in an America long ago, there were no Walmarts, no McDonald's, no factory farms, no corporate farms, and food wasn't genetically altered with tomatoes crossed with fish, or whatever foolishness mad scientists do. Towns grew up around the mills, auto plants, and foundries. There were real grandmas then, with blue hair, pearls, and flowered aprons, baking up hams, cookies, and plates of steaming vegetables. Grandma wasn't into marathons or liposuction, just taking care of her grandchildren. In the mill town where I spent the first 9 years of my life, everyone had a garden. We had no TV, though some of the neighbors did. We read books instead. Mondays were wash day, and the clotheslines danced in an array of sheets, work clothes, and curtains. Mothers were not forced into the workplace, and we somehow all managed from the meager wages of the mill. No designer clothes, no videos, no exotic eateries or drugs. Downtowns were filled on payday with neighbors at the drugstore, 5 and 10, and the local Sears. With no concrete fortress malls, neighbors chatted on street corners, met at the local diner for coffee, and children played in the park, with their luxury of the week, an ice cream cone. The American dream. The American dream, if it be truly known, was never the thought of some exclusive mansion, yachts, exotic travels, or diamonds and furs. No, it was small-town living, fishing in the creek, a job at the mill or plant, flower gardens, screen doors slamming, picnics on weekends, or a church dinner. The men worked hard in the hot mills with molten steel being poured, in the mines, or on the assembly line down at the auto plant. The owners lived far off in an unknown world of luxury and ease. Work and small-town living satisfied most. Summer nights would have neighbors on porches, a bonfire built to roast hot dogs, as children scampered through the night catching fireflies, playing hide-and-seek, or listening to the latest talk of work or politics. The clink of milk bottles at dawn, the huckster man with his vegetable wagon, the bread man, the family doctor with his bag visiting a sick child. Nothing fancy, but somehow safe. Medicine was affordable, with the pharmacist putting it on the tab until payday rolled around. The American dream was simply joying in community and wanting that college education for one's children. And now, in the 21st century, we see the dismantling of America piece by piece. Really, it's been decades in the making. Leaders were assassinated, men were sent off to an impossible war in Vietnam, on a lie. Drugs poured into the nation, destroying communities and families. Billions have been spent on something called a drug war that was never meant to be won. Downtowns, and thus community, was destroyed with the building of malls and megastores. The people were kept dutifully distracted over the years. In the poor neighborhoods, it was the gangs, drive-by shootings, and riots. Government housing became hives of people living behind barred doors and windows. It was no longer safe for fireflies in the night. Ever so insidiously, the American dream has become a forever nightmare. The mills, foundries, machine shops, textile plants closed quietly, one by one, across the country. The fields and woods where I played as a child were buried in asphalt for a mall, with the remainder of my childhood buried beneath tons of slag and ash from the mills. The owners of these places lived far away in removed enclaves of rarefied air and park-like compounds. What happened to the herd, masses, and visible ones was none of their concern. The robber barons of steel, oil, timber, and the railroads had their way politically in impoverishing the nation. Armies of lobbyists saw to special interests being served with subsidies, tax exemptions, and loopholed regulations. Chemical plants, industry, the military, factory farms, plundering of forests, oil drilling, incineration, and megadumps poisoned whole areas, killing untold thousands. Small-town citizens, with little money and less power, were and are no match for insatiable huckster plunderers who have no allegiance or loyalty to any land or people. Industry has legions of lawyers and billions to fight any outrageous concern of citizens not wanting to be poisoned. Across the land, small-town America became echoing rusted mill towns. Downtown stores were boarded up, with some old mills turned into shopping meccas or upscale novel housing. Mostly, though, they stand as archaic reminders of a once-upon-a-life. Haunted, men, gray and weary, are advised by the experts of government to retrain. Only detached, sniffed arrogance, hired, can proclaim such nonsense. Scarred steelworkers in Pittsburgh were advised to go into computer technology, train as nurses' aides, or as McWorkers. President Bush advised in his latest State of the Union address that the millions of unemployed should now train to be scientists or health workers. Oops, the computer jobs we were told to train for in the 70s and 80s are now gone to India. With all due respect, Mr. Bush has never had to work at a real job in his entire life. Any endeavor he did enter into, and failed at, was quickly rectified with the family fortunes. No shut-off notices, evictions, or hungry children in his life. Mr. Bush and his ilk, including Mr. Kerry, have never gone without that needed prescription, dental care, or doctor's visit because they didn't have the cash up front. The audacious, unmitigated, malignant gall to advise men in their late 40s, 50s, and 60s to go out and retrain. With what, pray tell? These men don't have the money nor the privilege of attending our nation's best schools. There is no family legacy giving them a preferred placement in an Ivy League college, despite their lack of intelligence or grade performance. And while these miners, farmers, textile workers, and auto workers are all attending to college life, what of their families? Shall they live in the family clunker car, or maybe in shanty Bushvilles set up in the mall in Washington? Insanity! President Bush's new manufacturing czar, Anthony Raimondo, has laid off his own workers as he builds a $3 million factory in China. Since this wizard's appointment, another 250,000 manufacturing jobs are gone overseas. Mr. Bush, doing a photo opportunity in Ohio, did well to surround himself with a gaggle of Republican women entrepreneurs. We weren't made privy to the smarter Ohio citizens demonstrating out in the streets. TV never shows dissent against the president or war. Be it New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, South Carolina, Mississippi, Oklahoma, California, etc., people are not buying this flag-waving, public relations buffoonery of electioneering, nor the blame game. Pass the buck, the continual mantra that we hear every 4 years. There's the usual whining, And it's not the current administration, but the one past that's to blame for all our woes. Doesn't matter who's at fault, we bear the brunt of the ineptness, greed, and incompetence. The buck stops at our front doors. The fact is, elephant or jackass, they are both to blame. Check their voting records. We no longer need to worry about robber barons influencing Washington. The robber barons are now firmly ensconced in public office. With a cabinet made up of oil interests, is it any wonder we don't have an energy policy? We do, but it's not for public consumption. Now everything can be hidden under national security, all except the lives of citizens. Operation Iraqi Liberation, OIL, had to be changed to Operation Iraqi Freedom, lest anyone suspect. Thousands of citizens lost their jobs and pensions due to this newest, don't forget the SNL fleecing, corporate fraud, and we get Martha Stewart with her drive-by flower stall heist off the streets. Martha didn't steal anyone's job or pension, but she's an example to all of governments getting tough on corporate crime. Now maybe they can get busy investigating the billions unaccounted for at the Defense Department, or the Halliburton cash cow in Iraq, and every other agency in Foggy Bottom. Billions gone missing all over Washington. Billions in tax subsidies. Billions for industry to relocate jobs abroad. Billions in bailouts for the utilities. Billions more for insurance, airlines, and pharmaceutical companies. And we're supposed to pay for all this on fixed incomes, jobs in prisons, casinos, or Walmarts? Would that Martha had been Neil Bush of the $1 billion ripoff of the Silverado savings and loan. She'd be doing business with Asia now, with strange men knocking on her hotel door offering favors. Asia apparently has a unique way of having you feel welcomed. In January 2004, there were 2,428 mass layoffs by employers. The number of workers was 239,454. President Bush tells us that he's creating 2.3 million new high-paying jobs. Now, if he could only put out a posting on where these jobs are, the exodus could begin. I know they're not in New Hampshire, Ohio, Pennsylvania, or anywhere in the South. Is he speaking of us all relocating to India, Guam, Taiwan, China, or Russia? Where are they? It can't be farming. The green pastures and idyllic barnyard scenes of years past have been replaced by windowless meadow sheds, wire cages, gestation crates, and other confinement systems known as factory farming. Animals are now fed drugs to fatten them faster and are genetically engineered to grow faster or to produce more milk or eggs than they would naturally. These farms produce billions of pounds of manure a day, which ends up in lakes, rivers, and drinking water. Little wonder that we are warned not to eat the fish and that people have built up an immunity to antibiotics in their bodies, seeing that they get their fill in the foods they eat and drink. If there was a law they was working with, maybe we could take it. But it ain't the law. They working away our spirits, trying to make us cringe and crawl, taking away our decency. Tom Joad from The Grapes of Wrath. No, these millions of new jobs ain't going to be in the mines, mills, foundries, fishing ports, auto plants, computers, nor back on the farm. Millions lost their farms in the 80s after the government urged them to load up on debt in the 70s and then cut off their markets while the bankers cut off the credit. When the tractors rolled in Washington, people in the cities couldn't care less because they didn't see how the turnover of family farms into corporate agriculture affected them. They do now. Too late. The last 20 years has seen a consolidation of agribusiness. The Justice Department, covering the breasts of nude statues in Washington, antitrust division is nowhere to be seen. In 1994, Congress, Democrats and Republicans, passed the North American Free Trade Agreement that opened American markets to Canadian and Mexican crops. Iowa has seen a $1 billion loss of farm income. In North Dakota, 2,511 wheat and cattle farmers have folded in the last 2 years, with an additional 1,807 expected to quit this year. Nope, we're not going back to the farm, which is what saved many during the Great Depression. In the South, said to be a bastion of Republicans, it's no better. Poultry processors have successfully gained a virtual monopoly on production by controlling the farmers who are now contracted to raise chickens and turkeys for them. The farmers make the capital investments and take all the risks. It's called a win-win proposition for the corporate hucksters. With just over 2 million farms remaining in the country, one can imagine the danger. Hogs. State and local officials, easily compromised, have done nothing to protect hapless people in their communities from large-scale producers that claim the right to put thousands of hogs anywhere they want, but not near the rich golf course, country clubs, of course. The spineless, compromised Environmental Protection Agency can fine the corporation after the waste spills into the local water supply, and after the hogs are sold at a profit that makes the fine little more than a business expense. With state regulators also compromised, air pollution regulations are ignored. Out in the West, it's water. Across the nation, local utilities are being privatized, in many instances by foreign owners. Farmers in Colorado, Arkansas, etc., no longer able to make a go of it, are selling their water rights. Bennett Raley, a Denver water lawyer, is now the Bush administration's point man for Western water issues. Out in the Arkansas River Valley, farms are giving way to prisons, and more prisons. In Crowley County, the railroad stations, stores, and car dealerships are all closed. The two new prisons there house 2,000 male inmates, half the county's population. What to do with a nation full of young men in need of employment? Lock them up, or send them off as cannon fodder for rich men's wars of global conquest. Give them the mantra of freedom, liberation, democracy, and ridding the world of terrorism. Meanwhile, billions are being made by the few in lucrative blow-em-up-and-then-rebuild contracts and oil deals. Need to get rid of nuclear waste? Simple. Make the bombs and shredding weaponry from depleted uranium. Drop it all over Kosovo and Iraq. Land, waters, people poisoned for billions of years. No matter. Call it collateral damage. Human resources, herd, simpletons, masses, useless eaters, acceptable risks, towel heads, rag heads, dispossessed, downsized, faceless and nameless. Defense Secretary Rumsfeld says, we don't count them. No, we don't see them, and we don't number them. We don't see the anguish of mothers, fathers, children, wives, and husbands, of those returned unceremoniously in bags. We don't see the armless child, the little girl dead with shredded feet, nor the melted bodies. We don't see the maimed in military hospitals, minus arms, legs, or blinded. I think of the young armless veteran in Massachusetts, the parents of an only son in Vermont, the boy from northern New Hampshire who loved to fish with his grandfather, the young mothers dead in war. Women in war. What madness is this? Mothers and fathers, both at war, leaving babies with grandparents. No, not the young of those who champion Bring 'em On, but the young of farmers, auto plant workers, ghettos, and small rural towns. Dead for what? Ridding the world of terrorism? How is this done? How do you fight the fog? How do you catch a moonbeam in your hand? I told Senator Kerry when he visited New Hampshire that terror could also be applied to those without jobs, unable to feed their children, those without medical coverage, eviction notices, and shutoff notices. I went on to explain that fear and dread depended on one's perspective. He assured me that it was Al-Qaeda that we should fear. With several homes worth $20 million and never suffering a job loss at age 50 or the loss of his home with nowhere to turn, it was evident, as it is with most politicians, that he had no empathetic understanding or knowledge of the paralyzing fear this brings, most especially in a nation with no safety net and nobody to care. Politicians today are mostly an ingathering of the well-off, the rich, the soon-to-be-rich, servicing the money boys. They come out of the woodwork every few years to mix with the unwashed masses, promising, forever promising, better education, a joke, prescriptions, medical care, jobs, housing, etc. 10 years after they voted NAFTA, which was supposed to secure jobs for Mexicans, Canadians, and Americans, they note the exodus of 11 million Mexicans looking for jobs, and millions of unemployed Americans, and Canadian companies now outsourcing. Now they're going to look for the 5 volumes of NAFTA they never read before voting on. Please, spare us the lies. Not one politician has spoke to the newest final death knell to American jobs that took place in Miami in November. Not one has spoken to the tens of thousands of citizens marching, not covered on TV, to save our jobs, and how thousands of police with stun guns, shields, clubs, pepper spray, and plastic bullets assaulted them. The elderly terrorized in the land, supposedly fighting world terrorism. The media, part and parcel of this theater of the bizarre, instead had the specter of Michael Jackson round the clock. News, journalists, investigative reporting is now as echoing as the untold stories across the land of the Dust Bowl, now the Rust Bowl. Silence equals consent. Martha Stewart, Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson's exposed breast, gay marriages, car chases, Donald Trump and whatever goofy reality show he does, The Passion, hearings on steroids, Las Vegas marriages, molesting priests, ad nauseum election antics, etc. But no news. Nothing that addresses the confusion, fears, despair, and anguish of the nation. Instead, we get Sherwin Williams, color-coded fear days, advice of duct tape and plastic sheeting for that next attack, followed by the calm advice to keep shopping. Pensions robbed, jobs gone, bankruptcies, hundreds of thousands of homeless, people dying for lack of medical care, salaries plummeting, taxes, cost of living out of sight, and nothing. Nothing but insane babbling and public relations canned propaganda disguised as real news. Industry protected with right-to-work legislation. Minimum wage at $5.15. Pollution excused. Tax subsidies for the wealthy resorts. Pork for those special states. Medicare monies for the insurance and pharmaceuticals. And the people? The people be damned. With lucrative salaries, 5 medical plans to choose from, jobs for family members, astounding pension plans, yearly cost of living increases, lobbying jobs waiting should one retire. Why don't politicians care and can't identify with the terror of a nation's race to the bottom in this planned global plantation? Because they don't have to. They won't be the armless veteran in Massachusetts, the auto worker with no place to go, the miner suffering black lung, the scarred steelworker, the fireman laid off, the mother or father working 2 or 3 jobs, or the family living in their car, terror-stricken that welfare will take their children. No, they don't know because there's no need to know. They have their nests feathered, and what happens to other people is none of their concern. When you belong to an elite club of political favoritism, you can vote your needs, wants, and desires into being. With 32.7 million new immigrants in the past decade alone brought in, there's plenty to do the scut work for the few jobs left without the threat of strikes. Industry is methodical and visionary in their seeing to a well-run plantation. They work in increments of decades, not week to week or paycheck to paycheck. Meanwhile, keep the rabble at each other's throats, send them to prison or to war. Give them 500 TV channels, lots of movies, concerts, sports, and you've got it made. The men and women who built a nation went to war after war, worked hard, obeyed the laws, weren't fleecing people, are now being kicked to the curb. A man loses his job, his farm, his land. The one becomes hundreds, then thousands, and then millions. The one becomes the we. Greed, arrogance, superiority, elitism, the quality of owning, possesses the haves into a forever I that cuts them off from the we. Men are not made to be idle, living in cars, under bridges, nor listening to the cry of hungry children. Men hunger for joy and some semblance of security, not duct tape. The one becomes the millions in their aches to grow, to work, to create. Man yearns to leave a part of himself in creation. Soon, men will know that dying for a concept, shredding the lives of others like himself, is not the way. He was meant to create, not destroy. Groveling and shuffling under the threats and intimidations of the few must stop. The one with his smoldering eyes, his haunted, fearful wife, and his terror-stricken children will ignite the spark. The one is not alone anymore, despite the containment of the media in its reporting of the restlessness, the awakening. Faceless corporations with their minions of political lackeys doing their bidding are not meant to farm the land, drench it with mineral-destroying chemicals, nor to alter nature's way with sterilized seeds nor genetics. The animals of the earth are not meant to be filled with growth hormones, caged, mutilated, terrorized in sunless factory farms for profit. The waters of the world are not for the taking by water barons. They belong to the we. The oceans are not the property of oil or gas interests sending fishing fleets home to rot at dockside. Millions, be they in China, Russia, Romania, Bulgaria, Taiwan, Haiti, Mexico, South America, the Philippines, South Korea, are not collateral damage, not fodder for profiteers, to spend their brief lives in sweatshop labors for pennies a day so that others might lead designer-clad lives. The youth of one land is not made to take up guns, bombs, and shredding, melting weapons to kill for another's land resources or strategic location. The jungles of Africa are not the possession of giant oil companies, destroying, poisoning, and plundering rainforests and rural villages. The mountains of South America do not belong to timber companies, destroying the irreplaceable that remote peoples have cared for. This is not a global plantation to be ruled by the few at the cost to the billions. Clowns with hatchets, mad with perverse, lustful power, were never given the authority to be gatekeepers over the lives of billions, telling them what to think, where to travel, or what to read or speak, nor how to be worked to death. How dare they? But the one becomes the two, or three, and then the millions. Men were not meant to be caged. This is our land, our planet, not a factory farm. A quote from The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. I got to figure, we all got to figure, there's some way to stop this. It's not like lightning or earthquakes. We've got a bad thing made by men. And by God, that's something we can change. Thank you so much to Judith Moriarty for allowing me to read her entire essay on this show. I especially love this essay because she describes the kind of life I had growing up in a small town, and I really miss that simplicity a lot. I hope you'll agree that she pretty much said it all here. But you know what? I'm going to keep talking about it anyway in this show, because I, for one, am pissed off by how much we have lost in this country. My God, people, we have lost everything. When are the American people going to wake up and recognize that and start doing the work that needs to be done to get our inheritance as a nation back? For my part, I'm going to be launching the Third World American USA Tour sooner than originally planned. In fact, I'll be hitting the road in about 2 weeks from now, around the beginning of November 2006. It's without a doubt the riskiest thing I've ever done, and it'll be harder work than anything else I've ever attempted, really. But what else can I do when my country needs me, and I have nothing to offer but myself? So that's what I'm going to do. In the meantime, I hope you'll follow the link on my webpage and read all of Judith's essays. She's a great writer, and there's a lot more where this came from, folks. I applaud Judith for caring so much to share her thoughts with us in the great tradition of writers like Thomas Paine. We need them today. Please visit my website at www.thirdworldamerican.com. That is third spelled out, T-H-I-R-D. The site will be growing quickly now that I'm beginning the USA tour. Follow the link to the show page where you can subscribe to this show, and that has instructions on how to install a free podcatcher so your computer will automatically download new episodes as they become available. Now that I'm beginning the tour, I'm going to be relying on the kindness of strangers more than I ever have before. So please, if you're able, click on the donate button on my show page. Donations are not tax deductible, and I wouldn't want it any other way. If you want a tax deduction, go right ahead and donate your money to a multimillionaire like Pat Robertson or Hillary Clinton. But if you want to demonstrate that you give a damn, then please donate to support the Third World American USA Tour instead. It might mean the difference between me eating tree bark or rice cakes over the next 12 months. Thank you very much for joining me for this first special edition of Third World American. My name is Paul, and I hope you'll be back for Episode 5, coming soon. None of us has a genuine opportunity to prosper.